Nasty Nationwide, live from Tampa. We welcome in the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens, Brian Billick, spending some time with us this week. First off, just some thoughts on all the Ray Lewis madness, and certainly your press conference was quite a show.
Well, it was just a matter of restating something that we stated after the incident. We restated after Ray's the dropping of charges. We restated in the beginning of training camp. And obviously, given the way it's been brought to light and some organizations choose to retry this in the court of public appeal, I guess, we're just restating our opinion again, which is the fact that we have moved beyond this. We're not going to address it any further while we're down here. And to pursue it any further is in nobody's best interest. And we simply re-clarified that. And we won't talk about it any further the rest of the week. This is supposed to be a great time for the fans of Baltimore and New York, for football fans, for the National Football League. And that's where the focus ought to be.
But you know the negativity is going to follow.
I mean, oh, that's absolutely. Just
generally, 3,000 media people here,
sure,
and they're looking for some trash to bring up.
Well, that and I said in the news conference as well, I'm not as naive to think that all of a sudden now this is going to go away. We simply stated we're not going to be involved with the dialogue. It just serves no purpose. For those that want to talk about it, they're going to do so without us. And from what I've seen, they're also going to do so without a whole lot of facts or a whole lot of purpose in mind.
Ray Lewis, as a football player, Hall of Famer, Buck is Singletary, all the Atlanta stuff last year aside, I think what has come out of this, in addition to the media muckraking, is it's always prefaced by Ray Lewis, who could be headed to the Hall of Fame. No one takes the football ability away from it.
Right.
I think that may be the one positive thing to come out of this from Ray's perspective, defensive player of the year, and certainly the leader of one of the greatest defenses in the history of the game.
Well, we have to go a while longer to put it in proper historical context in terms of just sheer ability, passion for the game, focus and intensity in preparation, production on a very short career so far. Clearly is heading in that direction with regards to a Hall of Fame. The challenge to Ray, as it is to any player, is to stretch that thing out with regards to, you know, maintaining it over certain period of time.
Additions to this year's team: Sam Adams and Shannon Sharp. Shannon Sharp with a lot of fanfare and his work with Ray when Ray was in Atlanta. But Sam Adams was one X factor. You guys weren't even all that interested in Sam Adams, and I guess it came as a shock that on draft day, Sam Adams came and came at a cheaper price against the salary cap, which builds to winning, and Sam Adams is going to the Pro Bowl next week, either way.
Well, it's when you get to this point as a coach, it's overwhelming to recognize how many things just have to kind of go your way. You orchestrate what you can. But sometimes fate has to play a hand, and it clearly did with regards to Sam Adams because of Larry Webster's situation, the fact that Sam was available, the fact that he would fit in the way that we thought he could fit in here, that he was at a point where, again, cap-wise, it was manageable. I mean, a lot of things had to happen, and I give a lot of credit, again, to Ozzie, to Shaq Harris, director of pro personnel, that was on top of the situation, that saw that Sam was a viability. We got Sam in here and were able to get him signed up, and there again, it was one of those things where fate takes a hand.
Trent Dilfer, Super Bowl champion. He could be going to Disneyland this week when it's all over with. For you, a backup quarterback when he came in, he convinced you that he was the guy. You had, I think, some concerns about whether he could be a backup quarterback. There's a certain mentality that goes into that. I think you had the same concerns about Tony Banks when he first came in behind Scott Mitchell a year and a half ago. Yet it's come full circle, and Trent Dilfer is the guy now. He is the poster boy. Your relationship with him and your thoughts about him, because you work with so many quarterbacks, and you bring up the Sean Salisburys, but the Warren Moons and the Brad Johnsons and the Randall Cunninghams. Where does he fit in all of that?
Well, Trent is a winner. He's a throwback. He's got the passion we talked about earlier, the passion for the game. Probably one of the smartest quarterbacks I've ever been around, and has a great sense for the game of what he needs to do and what he doesn't need to do for us to win a game. To come in the situation they did, to be sitting here as a starter at 10-1, the most common question I get asked during the course of the year is, can Trent Dilfer take you to a Super Bowl? And most people ask that question in their mind saying, I don't think so, so I'll ask you. Well, you're wrong. We're here with Trent Dilfer. And when I say you, I'm talking rhetorically. Is Kerry Collins a Super Bowl caliber quarterback? A lot of people question it, but you know what? They're here with Kerry Collins. I think that's the nature of the game right now. I think you're going to see a lot of teams that are going to have quarterbacks that have been elsewhere with limited amount of success. That's why they're available. there'll still be those teams that draft and able to take a guy and nurture him and turn, you know, turn into a legitimate starting quarterback for them. But I think you're going to see this scenario time and time again, and it's been great. It's been particularly for Trent to come back here. It's just another great storyline and a great year.
Brian Billick joining us here on Nasty Nationwide, discussing a variety of different topics, including Trent Dilfer. And Trent Dilfer will get the ball and the call 48 hours from now. Super Bowl 35, the Ravens and the New York Football Giants. Brian Baldinger is now on the scene. Papa Joe is here. I'm not sure which one. We may do some legendary radio when we get back. We may have Brian Baldinger and Papa Joe Chevalier in the same segment with myself. So this will be some a must-listen radio. I mean, it's going to be amazing. Baldy, is your mic hot?
Is it hot?
Yes, it is hot.
I know I'm hot. I know. I mean, people just want to touch me.
Well, I know one thing. Baldy will be with us when we continue. Papa Joe is moving over into the catbird seat here. Baldy, man, you missed a good show.
Hi.
Welcome back. Great to have Greg Gosell aboard from NFL Films. It is Nasty Nationwide on the Friday Football Frenzy. Expecting Warren Moon to drop in a little later on in the program. Right now, we're going to go back in time to Monday night. Sat down, had a little dinner with Brian Billick and some football chatter. The Ravens have been the least injured team in the National Football League this year, and we discussed injuries or lack thereof and how you get to the Super Bowl when your team doesn't get injured with Brian Billick.
Injuries haven't happened this year, and I guess one of the things you put together with your coaching staff is you try to get the best coaches and the best tacticians. But a lot of your players and your coaches have said to me personally, they think the strength and conditioning program that you have in your system is second to none and has kept your players healthy. And I think that's one story that we're not going to hear a whole lot about this week. It's not going to be written about. But the bottom line is you guys have been the least injured team in the league, and that may be a contributor to you being here in Tampa.
Well, that has a little bit of fate. You have to be lucky in that regard. But in that regard, you can also make your own luck. The structure that I have, it's a proven structure. It stems back to the Bill Walsh days of developing an off-season program, training camp mentality, the way you prepare during the course of the season, how you taper off physically, go from pads to shells to shorts to then shells, shorts, and shorts to eventually where you're just in shorts the latter part of the season with the idea of playing your best football in November and December. And when you look over the last 2 years, no one has played any better or has any better record over November, December, and now January than we do over the last 2 years. And I think the system works in that regards. And more importantly, the players believe in it. They know that we're going to take care of them. So that when we're on the field, whether it's training camp, during the regular season, when we're in the classroom, if we've got a 45-minute meeting, give me a 45-minute meeting. If you do, then it doesn't have to be an hour-and-a-half meeting. If you can give me a high-spirited, high-tempoed hour-and-a-half practice, and it doesn't have to be a two-and-a-half-hour practice, in the long run, that's what's going to keep us fresh.
One of the things they say that breaks Super Bowl teams, good Super Bowl teams, how they lose, is coming to the Super Bowl week and getting lost in it all. So much was made about Jim Fossil giving a curfew, you not giving a curfew. But it's weird for players to be cooped up, and coaches, and yourself, to be cooped up in a hotel room for a week and basically held hostage to the situation that you don't want to go out, you don't want to get in trouble, you don't want to be in a car accident, you don't want to have anything go wrong, and yet you're here, and you have never experienced this yet. Marvin Lewis has, Rob Woodson has, Shannon Sharp has, Harry Swain has. What have the people that have experienced this told you about it, and how have you made yourself so prepared? Because it's pretty infamous that you had made a list of every single day back in November that you were going to be at the Super Bowl, you were going to be at Tampa, and right now you're sitting exactly where you thought you'd be sitting.
Well, part of the job is to be prepared and to prepare your players for what they can expect. The most common bit of advice I get from anybody that's been here, coaches or player alike, and I've canvassed many over the last few years, is you've got to do what you normally do. You've got to keep a routine. You can't change what you do dramatically because of the nature of the game. You have to appreciate and understand that when you get down to wherever the Super Bowl site is, it's an arena that you can't imagine having never been there. But you've got to stay true to who you are. And that's exactly what we've done. We've come through an arduous month of playing Denver here, going on the road to Tennessee, going on the road to Oakland. In anticipation of that, the key for us is to now stay fresh. So our approach last week was minimal with regards to the physical exertion, but very high in terms of the meeting time and what we were trying to get done mentally. What we'll try to do here and why we came in on Monday. Some people are questioning, why didn't we come in on Sunday? Because these guys have not spent a Sunday with their families since August. We normally begin our work week on Monday. And that's exactly what we did this week. We had a weight workout, which is what they normally do on a Monday. We then travel down here. They'll have Tuesday off, all but with the additional media requirements. And then we'll begin Wednesday, like any other week that we've begun, and go through the same teaching progression we've gone before. And keeping that routine, I think, is the best way for our players to play their best, because it's a routine that they're comfortable with.
Curfew.
Well, when I got here in Baltimore, there were two things that the very first meeting I had with my players, I said, there are two things that we are going to do. One, we are going to play with passion, and I'm going to do everything I can to show you, give you examples, put people in front of you that know about what the passion it takes to play in the National Football League. This team plays with passion. Anybody that has seen this team plays know that they do that. The second thing was accountability, that we had some good athletes here, but I made it clear right from the get-go. Do you want to go to the Pro Bowl or do you want to go to the Super Bowl? Because sometimes it's a conscious choice. You have to give up personal things for team successes, and accountability is part of that. We've had curfews like everybody. We have curfew in training camp. We have curfew on the road the night before game and the curfew before we play a home game. But I have no bed check. These are grown men. I told them, if you act like men, then I'll treat you like men. And for 2 years, it has never been a problem. They know what the structure is. They know what the routine is. They know they need to stay rested. They know what's at stake. I trust them to do the right thing. They are grown men, and I'm going to treat them like men. I'm going to give them the best structure I can. But if I have to babysit these guys at this point to get them to do what they know they need to do to get ready for the game.
In the biggest game of their life as well.
We don't have much of a chance on Sunday if that's the kind of guys that I have.
Brian Billick speaking on Monday to me regarding the team's chances and the injuries and the curfew. And so much, the stories of Super Bowl week in the media really taking on lives of their own. I mean, I guess it all started with the Ray Lewis story. There was the curfew story that came out of the Jim Fossil situation. And then it became the anti-Ray Lewis thing, where Shannon Sharpe stands up to defend Ray Lewis. And teammates like Chris McAllister and Tony Siragusa have come out to defend. Welcome back, Nasty Nationwide. Chatted with Brian Billick earlier this week on Monday night. We continue our conversation with Brian Billick regarding winning a Super Bowl with a defense.
Brian Billick joining us here on Nasty Nationwide. Some thoughts on the offensive side of the ball. You called it the dark side, I think, kind of facetiously. Is it the dark side if you have a Super Bowl ring 5 days from now with an offense that may generate 9 points and a 9-3 win this week?
You know, when you look at some of the great games in the past and the 17-14 scores and the 14-10 scores, it's kind of interesting. It kind of takes on a personality in of itself. Not many people are talking about the Giants offense in the same regard as us. But when you look at statistically over the course of the season, the amount of yards gained, the point score, the third down conversion rate, we're kind of mirror images of one another. So sometimes it's more perception than reality. We've done what we've needed to do on the offensive side of the ball, the defensive side of the ball, and special teams to be where we're at, and we're very proud of that.
You've heard that your offense stinks all week, yet you scored more points than the Giants this year. Explain that.
Well, perception versus reality. There again, you have a lot of people commenting on things that it's interesting, particularly in this environment, and I've tried to warn the players about it. There is so much competition. I think they gave us a figure today that there are 2,700 media credentials and however many just show up. That's a lot of storylines. That's a lot of information that a person can say something to one media person, and within the span of about 15 minutes, it can go 180 degrees the other way as it passes from one media member to the next. You see it on the national broadcasts.
We used to call it phone booth, I think.
Exactly. Sean Salisbury, who played for me, is doing a great job with ESPN. Goes on last night about wondering why we had a padded practice last week, which is amazing to me in that we had 150 people crawling all over that building last week. You would think one of them, maybe one might notice that we didn't have a padded practice last week. But there again, one guy tells this guy this, then the other, all of a sudden, and now here's a national prominent broadcast questioning why we were in pads last week when we weren't.
And that's just going to be the first of many things that are inaccurate
absolutely.
This week.
Absolutely.
You worked in the media. You're trained in the media.
Absolutely. So you hold it at arm's length. Some of it you look kind of humorously and wondering how it got to be that way. Tuesday's media briefing or media day is an amazing thing to behold. And it's kind of fun to sit back and watch you all just kind of crawl over one another, trying to come up with some kind of different storyline when we're all kind of saying the same thing.
For you, cocky, arrogant, self-confident, egomaniacal, all those.
And those are the good ones.
Those are just the good ones. For you, are you taking the Lightning for the team this week? I mean, are you trying to be the media guy and say, leave Trent alone, leave Ray alone, leave my guys alone, Shannon and I will do all the talking, and we're just going to play the game on Sunday?
No, I'm not that smart, am I?
I don't know. Maybe you are.
You do whatever you have to get your team ready for the biggest game in their lives. This is an arena that not many have been through before. We're fortunate in that we have some guys, I think we have seven guys, that have been in this game before. So that's a huge resource for us to really be able to look the players in the eyes and say, look, this is what's going to happen. This is how this is going to be. You can try to lay it out as a coach for them and prepare them, but the players that have been there can tell them about media day, can tell them how the week winds down, what the atmosphere is at the stadium when you go to the stadium, and that's invaluable for us. So we're just trying to set the stage. We're going to have fun along the way, but that doesn't mean we're not serious about this. People may very well misunderstand our demeanor. This is a team that all year long has enjoyed what they do, and they enjoy being out of practice. But when it comes time for whatever portion of practice they're involved with, they got to focus, they can snap it back into focus, and they've proven that. So they're going to enjoy themselves here. They're going to remain focused. We'll get our preparation done in the way that we've done it all along, and we're going to go out and play the best game we can on Sunday, but we're not going to let this experience get away from us have to look back and go, geez, I wish that I would have absorbed the moment a little bit more.
Three things, concerns, feelings you have about the game this week that were concerns to you. If this, then that. This is how we screw up. This is how we lose. This is how we lost the Miami game, the Washington game. You only lost four times, and it's been 10 weeks since you've lost. Your concerns coming down here, the things that could go wrong, the pitfalls.
Well, the first concern has been, although I'm feeling better about it, but still is, how fresh are we? It's been a long road here. So the nature of what we did last week, I'm going to be very careful about what we do this week, but we still have to prepare. So that's a very fine line to walk. So that's my biggest concern. The second concern has to be the focus on special teams. I think these two teams are so evenly matched that I think, and it's a bit cliche because typically special teams are always going to play a big factor in it, but I think special teams, whether it be field position or a team getting a score out of the special teams, meaning a punt return, kickoff return, a blocked punt, something of that nature, a blocked field goal, is going to play a big part in it. So our special teams have to play a big part in what we're doing. And then the other thing is obviously to handle the distractions of what's going on and the fact that you really can't prepare for it, but at some point you've got to find that emotional spot to where you can isolate yourself from what's going on and stay focused on the game.
3 days away from Super Bowl 35. That was Coach Brian Billick of the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens will take on the Giants at Raymond James Stadium on Sunday. We're in Tampa. We'll be joined by Donnie Abraham from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers next.
One-on-one sports.
Purple is the color of Aquarius, so you'll be safe. Go with the purple.
Words of wisdom, Lloyd. Words of wisdom. We chatted with the leader of the Men in Purple, head coach Brian Billick. A little dinner with Brian on Monday. We have some excerpts of our conversation. We talked about what it takes to turn a franchise around in just over 100 weeks. 100 weeks ago today, Brian Billick takes the job. Now they're in the Super Bowl, and here is our conversation.
So you're as shocked as the media, you're as shocked as the fans of Baltimore, you're as shocked as maybe even some of your players that you're sitting here on the eve of a Super Bowl 100 weeks after taking a job.
I don't know if it's shocked is the right term, but it's certainly unconventional. It's not something, I don't know that anybody has taken, and I don't say this in a self-serving manner, I'm saying this as a compliment to the players, the entire coaching staff, the organization, Ozzie, Newsom, the Modells, clearly. I don't know of anybody that has taken a losing organization, or I should say a losing team, and in taking that losing team in such a short period of time, from beginning to end, 2 years going to the Super Bowl. So it's a little unconventional, but it's obviously very gratifying.
Let's get back to Ozzie Newsome. You were a former tight end. Never really achieved as much in your career as Ozzie did.
Now, using my name and Ozzie's name and the word tight end in the same paragraph is that I don't know if I can allow that. I've got a ways to go before, like, what some 900 catches?
Well, in using them in the same breath, you were in the same breath, and you took a job where you're under Ozzie Newsome. How much of the legend of Ozzie as a receiver goes into, I mean, getting the job with Art is obviously a family relationship, but now you come in and you're not only working with an executive you don't know, and we're not even sure of his competency. We know he was a great player, and to find yourself in such a great working relationship, was there a little, I don't want to say intimidation, because Lord knows you worked through all the years with the 49ers, but there has to be a little bit of that going into
it. Well, there's a huge, huge amount of respect, and Ozzie is a fairly egoless man. You know, he's all about winning. He doesn't want the limelight, which works out real good because it compensates for my oversight.
Exactly.
The thing that I think has helped between Ozzie and I is Ozzie has coached. And so he understands, I think, more readily the pressures I have to deal with and the perspective I've had. Unique to most coaches' backgrounds, I've been on the administrative side. And so I think I maybe understand that aspect of it just a little bit better than maybe a coach who's never been exposed to the administration of the NFL and the inner workings of a team from that perspective. So we have a great appreciation for what the other guy has to do and the pressures he has to deal with. So, you know, when I first talked with Ozzie about it, I made a comment to him that there'd be no compromise when we had disagreed on an issue. And I'm not sure then he understood what I was saying, but I think he does now from the standpoint that if you compromise, there's no accountability, and that's not good. It's his job to convince me to his way of thinking, or it's my job to convince him to my way of thinking if we get to an issue that we disagree. And we've always been able to do that. And that's the key to our ability to kind of piece this thing together.
On to the players. Ray Lewis as a football player. Did you have any idea, maybe even in the one game you coached the Minnesota Vikings as an offensive coordinator a few years ago and came in with, let's be honest, one of the greatest offenses in the history of the game, that the Ravens shut you down for a while in that game, and yeah, Ray Lewis was certainly a part of it?
Very much so. They've got a great deal. Like I said, they had a great deal of talent, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. A lot of the guys that you see now and played with a tremendous amount of passion at a time where a lot of teams maybe wouldn't do that. And they did. That's what drew me to Marvin Lewis, because I think he did an excellent job, even though I think this final score was 38-14 or something like that. That was not indicative of how close a game it really was. It was kind of a funny game with the kickoff returns. We ran something like 45 plays to 50 plays in the first half alone, got down to the red zone repeatedly, and could only come away with field goals. It took our kickoff return for a touchdown to kind of break the ice. So you knew then that they had some pretty good talent.
I've talked to 50 people this week, and they've all brought up the one way to beat the Baltimore Ravens. Do what the Jets did on Christmas Eve. Not many people around the country saw what the Jets did, but the Jets marched down the field twice in your home building using a no-huddle offense, keeping your base package defense on the field, and just rammed it down your throats twice in a row. That's happened once before, but to have it happen twice – you know the Giants are looking at that tape. My answer to that riddle is always, well, the Ravens have that tape too, and they're trying to fix what went wrong. Some thoughts about the one time something really did go wrong. Yeah. And obviously you won that football game, but they'll say you won it with special teams, and certainly you won it with big plays on defense.
Sure, and that's the ultimate. Again, keep in mind the situation. The Jets came in needing a win to make the playoffs. We had virtually no stake in the game. Yeah, there was the chance that Tennessee might lose to Dallas. I don't think people gave that much chance. So really, we didn't have anything vested in the game other than at home wanting to play well.
Get home for Christmas Eve dinner.
Exactly right. And the game took on a certain personality. I will tell you what, this team, we gained from that experience, having to come back from 14 points down and win the way we did, much more so, particularly going into the playoffs, had we come out from the get-go, kind of controlled it like we had the previous six or seven games we played, and won that way. And so this team learned what it was to come back under those circumstances. Yeah, someone can look at that film and say, let's try to do this. If someone wants to try to come out, totally abandon the running game and throw the ball 70 times,